It's been a good year since the last Occupy camp has been dispersed. What's your opinion? What impact has this movement had on the American society and the politics?
Those are two different questions, American society and politics. From a political perspective, I think it's been... I think it's clear that Obama most likely would not have won, at least not by the amount he did, and perhaps not even at all, had Occupy not happened, because it changed the dialogue fundamentally in a way that it made Mitt Romney an unelectable one percenter, and the entire nation could see it. But before, we didn't have the language to describe it. So I think it, even if we haven't yet had really any noticeable impact in a political sense, because we weren't an electoral, we weren't a movement, it was not a movement seeking to join or to form in any way part of the political establishment, the impact on society by changing the conversation and putting a light on social and economic inequality and on the essential governance of Washington by Wall Street and by corporations and financial institutions, something that's been happening for decades but which hasn't been discussed openly ever, in a sense, in America, or at least for a century. By doing that, it changed the political conversation because it meant that we're ready for people who actually address issues of the great inequality that right now has made America almost incapacitated, crippled nation.
Now, do you believe that the horizontal and leaderless structure of the Occupy movement is something that is a good path towards articulating the demands and the status of the structure of the social injustice in America?
The way that we did it?
Yeah.
The way we did it obviously could not, because we had no... That was one of the fundamental missing elements of the movement, was an ability, a structural ability, to make decisions regarding our direction, our larger direction, our goals. I think that everybody was so enamored, so in love with, and so attracted to the idea of occupying, which is essentially a tactic. That's a tactic to get attention and to draw attention, that we forgot, in a sense, that that was not the overall strategy. We turned the tactic into the strategy. And the actual dialogue about where we wanted to take the movement and where we needed to evolve after the camps closed. And long before the camps closed, we had opportunities to really begin to further the project, whatever Occupy was to be. But I think that the horizontal structure, as amazing as it felt to be part of, and as essentially as revolutionary as it was, because it created an environment that for Americans who don't even leave their automobile and who live completely isolated individual lives, where everyone looks out for themselves, like unlike any other country maybe in the world, as the most individual country, it's our identity. So the idea that we could bring thousands of people into a common space where they're not buying things, where they're simply sitting, standing, sleeping, eating, and being together without consumption involved and without even a political agenda involved, that was the revolutionary thing, and that's what the horizontal ethos helped create. And it was totally new for us, and that's what broke things open. It allowed people to talk. But if you want to say, what did that lead to, and could it lead to something, maybe in the next stage of it, maybe in a few years, maybe when we realize the mistakes we made or the opportunities that we missed, we could still do something like a horizontal tight movement. But I think myself, and I think many people think, that we need leadership in some form, because structure means actual sense of almost rules or guidelines or definition. And with rulership of the 99%, you don't exactly get decisions in any efficient way. But, you know, if you're willing to take 5 or 10 years to make decisions, you can. But I think we need to move faster, and it probably means more strict sense of central of people who are delegated to help decide things for the group.
We are talking about such a mass of people, like 99%. Is direct democracy a good way of reaching decisions?
Direct democracy, what we were attempting. I mean, we're just experimenting with it. I think that if you're in small communities, I think that if you're like the community, like the size of a park, like several hundred or even maybe several thousand, but I think more like in the hundreds, then I think, yeah, why not? Then that's kind of what anarchism's all about, right? Small communities, and then you can really decide because everyone can participate. But once it becomes, once it grows beyond that initial size, I don't know if it's a realistic form, whether it's a great idea, but I don't know if it actually has practical ability in the world we're living in today.
You walking here?
So to finish that direct democracy, what are you saying? Is it realistic, or is it a proper organizing tool, a proper way to make decisions? Like, it's almost in contradiction. The direct democracy that we in the West are talking about is kind of in contradiction with the lifestyle we're leading. I think direct democracy for a more genuinely tribal kind of living, where people really have a more simple, or even just a back to the land. I think if you're living in a more, you know, a bit more homogenous, where the community knows and trusts itself and has deeper ties, I think it makes absolute sense. But I think to thrust a new system, radically new, like direct democracy, where every individual has a voice in this incredibly pluralistic world of our modern world, where everyone is completely different and encouraged to be completely different, in terms of, not that we really are that different, but where everybody has the right to express their views. I think it's too quick, probably. It doesn't have practical bearing on the world we're in. Because, no, how can you get something done if 100 people have 100 different ideas for what should be done?
So in this sense, we are still condemned to a political party in a representative system.
I would say condemned. I think we have to work right now in the system that, in what we see around us right now, and for the foreseeable future, barring some catastrophic event that throws the world into a complete, you know, disarray in all places, or even in a nation where the state completely breaks down. I think that right now it's obvious that the power, military, police, the power of violence, the state power, is not going anywhere. So the only true way, if we want to be realistic, not idealistic, not utopianistic, if you want to actually talk about how we today or in the next 2 decades, looking at our lifetimes, how we can start to change things, I don't see another way except by joining the system that works and changing it from by becoming part of it and by bringing our new minds to the system that works, because the majority of people don't want to see an overthrow of their way of life, and I don't think they will permit it. And the idea that we're going to have some kind of a revolution that of that scale, a Bolshevik style revolution, ain't gonna happen, because power is too great, capital is too great, and they've pretty much built the system to make that impossible. So it's fighting a losing battle to think you're going to change it. You can build a social movement without having a political party. And Occupy tried. Occupy's idea was that we don't need politics because we will build a movement so powerful that we will force the political elements to change, because they will have to listen to 10 or 20 or 50 million Americans saying, you know, with such a voice that they couldn't be denied. But in that sense, you don't have to form a political party. But even then, the political elements, in order for them to respect and feel compelled to make changes, they would have to see some agenda or some political presentation on your side, because otherwise how are you going to get them to do what you want them to do anyway? You can't simply tell people what's wrong. You have to construct a new agenda, a new platform, and I think that is a political act in itself. And so in that way, yeah, I think that we're condemned to call it politics. I think we need a new name, because everyone hates the name politics and they hate politicians. And no one even wants to consider that they too would join and become part of even a new generation of politicians, because we're aware that it corrupts everybody. Even us, we idealistic enough to think that we can create new political groups. But I think we have no choice. Yeah. Condemned. The short answer is yes, condemned.
So what is the perception of U.S. public of the Occupy movement and the Volt? What's the connotation that is attached to the Volt Occupy now in the perception of the U.S. public?
A bit stained, you know, stained and disappointed. But the public that is disappointed is also the public that disappointed us as Occupy. The public expected, I think the perception is somehow the public expected Occupy to be this political change. Like they were waiting for some kind of heroic new party to emerge that was going to all of a sudden lay on their fucking dinner plate the new agenda. You know, well, Occupy, give us your demands, tell us what you want. We never, Occupy in itself, never intended to be that political idea, lightning bolt that was going to come down, and all of a sudden, it wanted everything, right? Occupy was a kind of a utopian idea, because we want a systemic change, and you don't. Part of our entire identity of Occupy is we're not going to break this down into 5 points that we want to see worked on and hand our legislators and our lawmakers, you know, a little list of things that we want changed. No, the whole purpose of Occupy is our entire system is flawed deeply, profoundly, and probably irreparably in its current form. Though not irreparably, because I think that by reversing some of the changes that have been for the last 30 or 40 years, I think that Occupy, if it could compromise a bit its ideals, would see, could actually do these political, could make political suggestions and proposals, such as taxing the wealthy, such as restoring laws that, you know, make banks and corporations and politicians that break the rules, that hold them accountable. That's part of what Occupy was all about. But the public was pretty disillusioned and saw, I think, that we were an amateur attempt at something that the public immediately responded to well. The public instantly understood the message. It was not a matter of communicating what we were about. They got it quickly, but they wanted more. And after 2 or 3 months, if you don't give them something clear, move the other way. The media, from the media to the military, to the law enforcement, to the basic public on the street, everybody, I think, after several months saw that beyond occupying, we didn't have very much of a clear idea. So we basically fell off the map, and we stayed off the map. And once you fall off the map, it's very hard to get back on it, once you've been as high as we were at the beginning. Because what are you going to do? You would almost have to form a political party or do something dramatic that sprung up. You would have to call for a march and have a million people show up to really get people's attention, because it was dramatic. It was declared a movement maybe too early. People were so hungry in America and probably worldwide to see something happen that we declared ourselves as something bigger than we were. And it was like a big bursting explosion that had its 6 weeks, 8 weeks of incredible intensity, and then great disappointment to see it kind of vanish. But also inevitable, because the amount of energy that a few people, that's as much as the people were disappointed in Occupy, we were disappointed in people that they didn't take up the call to action. It wasn't saying we're going to solve your problems. It was saying, wake up, let's get busy and stir yourselves off your couch, out of your workplaces, and start to make demands. And the demands were real. There are teacher strikes, there are bus strikes, there are workers in restaurants, major Walmart, all sorts of major social movement grew out of Occupy. So when people say the movement isn't there and what impact, it helped stimulate and spark a whole new confidence in regular working people and in young people, students, everyone, that all of a sudden we can begin to collect our voices and be loud and shut down work if necessary, make actual demands. But then, of course, regular life seduces people back into the ruts. But I think we're going to have another wave. It's just, it will be different from Occupy. Things are building towards something new.
So, while it is probably it's very hard to form a new political party in a big party system that is the United States, the Europe has more maneuver space in this option.
Maneuvering space.
Maneuvering, yeah. What's your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. I would be, given the crisis in Europe and the degree of desperation and the level of suffering that's happening now all over the continent, that is only not happening in the far north. I mean, in Scandinavia, but even in Germany, the levels of poverty are going way up from what Germans have known. And now you're already seeing the alternative party in Germany that just launched last week, which is an anti-Euro party. That kind of thing will happen, and I'm sure more reactionary, right-oriented parties are going to start to emerge because of people's simple intolerance with the status quo. I would see so many countries in Europe, from the Balkan to obviously Greece and Bulgaria, and over moving west. Italy, we just saw with the Griot party, the five-star. I would be shocked if in the next year or two, given the fact that they're not making any changes and they have no solutions, the politicians running the country and the finance ministers who are running the politicians from the European Central Bank and from Brussels and from, London and Zurich, the ones who are making the choices, the Goldman Sachs financiers who have become the presidents and prime ministers, Italy's man, former
Monte.
These guys who were put in place by Goldman Sachs, I mean, they do not have new ideas. Privatizing and neo-liberal sort of cost-cutting austerity measures, that is their agenda. There isn't another one. So I would be shocked if people really quickly, in the next couple of years, didn't get together, young people in their 20s and 30s, who are educated and who see their future is essentially vanishing. You either emigrate or you change your system, because there's no future as it stands now. I'd be shocked if there weren't more political, a whole wave of new political movements like we just saw in Italy, but many more, like Spain, like people from the M15 movement, from that general area, deciding to get political, form a platform, talk to the people and say, this is going to be our new agenda, vote for us and actually enter the system, rather than demonstrating in the street, which we've seen has its major limits, because you can only march for so many days and you can only get so many people out in the streets and surround Parliament so many times without anything changing. before you try a different route, right? And so many people going to jail and getting beaten, and eventually it will get more violent than it is now. People haven't even gotten violent, and I think a lot of people are surprised at how calm it's been, relatively, right? Given the degree of outrage and suffering. So, yeah, they kick more people out of their homes, and more families lose everything, and more banks get bailed out and take pensions and take people's futures. It's only, I think, a matter of time, and we're just looking at the early stage. But in the next 2, 3, 4 years, I cannot imagine it remaining the way it is, like it is today. We'll have a different political landscape next election season, everywhere.